Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
This week with Health Minister Andrew Little, I asked him about the bill to ban conversion therapy being passed in Parliament for its first reading last Thursday, but I started by talking about the new health indicators that he announced last Friday as part of the health sector reforms. This week, just focusing on the health indicators that you announced in a speech to a GP conference last Friday. So what is this about?
So this is about a set of measures, if you like, that tell us what is going right or wrong with the health system. So previously we've had health targets, so various things that had to be done within a certain range of things. Classic one is seen within 6 hours of arriving at an emergency department. That stuff will continue. We found that with the targets, and they've been in place for the best part of 15 years, is that it changed some behaviours, but actually it led to some pretty unhelpful responses. One of the targets was about the number of procedures that a hospital did. All that meant was a whole bunch of the DHBs held on to very trivial sort of procedures, many that could be done in a doctor's surgery, and did them in a hospital, which tends to be more expensive. So these are measures that look at what is happening. One is they call it the ambulatory sensitive hospitalisation. So these are people who turn up to hospital who whose condition could have been treated somewhere else other than a hospital. And if those numbers are going up, then we wanted to know why. Normally what it is that there's something wrong with primary care available in the community. Not enough GPs, not enough GP clinics open long enough, no after-hour service, that sort of thing. So the sort of indicators we've got in place are about telling us whether the whole system is operating as opposed to just very small bits of it.
So the indicators, how does that work? Is it going to be based on the entire country or based on a centralised local area?
It'll be both. So we'll have a measure for the whole system, and then we'll have measures that can be drawn down to at a more localised basis, and we can break it down to ethnicity and different communities as well. So the data will be quite rich, and we can gauge what is happening with population groups in particular areas and, as I say, across the system as a whole.
Right. You were really emphasising that this indicators is not targets, but how do you determine... But is there going to be a threshold that basically said, oh, the system is underperforming there?
Yeah, well, we will gauge... I mean, as I say, we will still have those measures about are certain things being done within a period of time. And we know that thing about, for example, if you're diagnosed with cancer... Your expectation that you will have your first treatment within 62 days of a diagnosis. That will stay because we need to know that that is happening and that people aren't hanging around on waiting lists for important treatment. But what we also want to know is the system responding? The people who are turning up to hospital, is the hospital the best place for them to be, or should they actually have been seen by someone earlier on? There's a very specific one about mental health, because we know right now there is a major challenge for the system to see young people in particular who are diagnosed with a mental health issue and they need acute help. So they're meant to be seen within 3 weeks of a diagnosis by their doctor, by their GP. Many are waiting much longer than that. We really need to address that. So we put that in there. And it will be the case that over time, some of these measures, we will change out some of these measures if things, if particular parts of the system look like they're working okay. But we wanted to know those things that if something isn't operating somewhere, it's caused by something else in the system, or it's having a consequence, a downstream consequence on something else in the system as well. So it's focusing on the system and its performance as opposed to, as I say, individual bits of it.
To go into the indicators themselves a little bit further ahead, but what will happen if, let's say, the system seems to be underperforming in some indicators, like for bowels, there is an indicator for bowel screening. What happens if the indicators doesn't look that right? Because back when health targets are still in place, basically it's name and shame.
Yeah, and I think the that kind of might have helped to some degree. What it tended to do was not improve service performance. It was just change the way DHBs recorded data, or they manipulated things. So, I mean, the classic was for people turning up to ED. People would be, if they turned up and it clearly wasn't a hospital matter, they'd quickly usher them out the door and not record them as having turned up to ED. I mean, we want to know if people are turning up to emergency departments, even if it's better they went somewhere else, because we need to know why it is they turned up there and not go somewhere else. For some, it'll be a cost thing. It'll be affordability. So the response will be different. We want to know what in the system has led to particular things happening. When it comes to bowel screening, we've committed to a national bowel screening program. We want to see those numbers, and we want to see the numbers as a proportion of the target population. If that seems to be falling, then we want to know why. Why is it? You know, are the test kits, are they getting out to people? Are people returning the tests that they provide? Are they being processed? What is happening with diagnosis? What is happening with treatment? I mean, it leads to a whole bunch of other questions about the system as opposed to a very, very small point.
Right. The other indicators also include immunisation rates, budgets and surgery waiting lists, but still no indicators on oral health. Well, considering the budget hasn't funded the dental grants that Labour promised at the last election, why isn't there an indicator related to oral health?
Well, because right now, we apart from the support that we give through MSD to people who are needing oral care, and you're right, we have promised to increase that. We didn't do it in this budget. We've got two more budgets to do it. Oral health is not a big part of the public health provision. Now, you know, there's plenty of views that say actually it should be, as long overdue, and I'm not sure I disagree with that, but it's not part of public health provision at the moment. There are some dentists and hospitals who deal with the dental issues for people who are already in hospital, some people who turn up to hospital because they can't get their serious dental care provided elsewhere. But aside from that, we don't have a lot of dental health care provision. So consequently, it didn't make sense to have an indicator about that.
What about staffing levels? Should that be an indicator for safe staffing levels, considering we talked about that around the nurses last week?
Well, we do. The nurses do have an agreement about safe staffing, and they have this program called Care Capacity Demand Management. And as a consequence of that, in the last 3 years, we have funded an additional 3,000 full-time equivalent nurse roles. Although we still have a large number of nurse vacancies, roughly 1,500 across the hospital system. So we do already have that. There are already kind of agreed ratios, and it's in particular different services. Obviously, a much lower ratio for something like intensive care than it is for an ordinary ward. But we do have that already. And I think there are measures around, certainly comparative measures around different clinician types per kind of 100,000 of population. So we do kind of keep a track of that, but in the end, you have a set of health services to meet the needs of the population you've got across both primary care and hospital level care. That's going to differ. We have particular challenges here because of our ethnic makeup and the fact that we've got some populations who have been disadvantaged for a long time, Māori and Pacifica in particular, and we have to have a system that is responding much better to the situation that those population groups are in.
Okay, moving on to my second topic of the day, it's about the bill that will ban conversion therapy that was passed through at Parliament for the first reading last Thursday. So what are your general thoughts on the bill?
This has been a work in progress for some time, so it's great. The Minister, Chris Farfour, has now managed to get it into the House. This has been an issue that's been brought to Ministers' attention, as I say, for some time. The idea that particularly young people who are facing up to their sexuality and and have either parents or are part of communities that are not accepting of different sexualities, gay, lesbian, transgender, whatever, and put young people through processes to try to persuade them that they're not of their sexual orientation. It is hideous. It has huge impact on people in terms of mental health and their sense of self, and it's just very unhealthy. So it is time to call it out. This is a bill that does that and says that this sort of approach is just simply not acceptable. People have got to come to terms and be able to come to terms with the full extent of their identity regardless, and we should be nurturing and encouraging of people, not trying to persuade people that somehow a part of their identity that they have no control over is somehow wrong.
Well, National is voted against the bill, and they are arguing that it could cause parents to face prosecutions. Do you think this is some sort of fear-mongering or even cynical?
It's definitely fear-mongering. Look, there are parents who will struggle with a child who identifies as gay or transgender or whatever sexual identity they have. And they will talk to their children about it, but that conversation is perfectly natural, and you want that to happen. However, if a parent says, "I don't like that, you are not that, and I'm going to get you fixed up and sorted out," actually, that is something we actually need to protect a person from. And so there are some protections against that. But I think the fear-mongering about somehow this is going to interfere with parents looking out for the welfare of their child, even if it is sort of ham-fisted and a bit confused, is just completely wrong. But it is, the law is sending a very clear signal that you are who you are, and we want you to celebrate who you are regardless, and nobody should be sort of setting themselves up somehow to make you something that you're not, because somehow your sexual identity or sexual orientation is invalid. There's no such thing as an invalid sexual orientation. It is what it is, and you are who you are, and we welcome you and embrace you for that.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire.